Hello and welcome to International Development Where Now, the podcast that talks to thinkers and doers from diverse countries and tries to work out where we've come from, where we're going, and sometimes whether there are options for doing things differently. I'm Shamim Zakaria. I am a consultant with the Energy, Resources and Growth team that sits within the Climate, Sustainability and Resilience Practice at Oxford Policy Management. I am based in Kenya and I am your host today. Perhaps this episode should actually be called International Development What Now, as we are talking about something that's a bit of a buzzword within the international development sector, localization. Loosely defined, it's the transfer of funding and decision-making powers to local actors. Localization is certainly not a new concept. Phrases such as locally led development, community led development, and doing development differently have been pretty commonplace for years. But what is local? How can we localize in a meaningful way? And what's our role as development consultants in all of this? Today, I'm talking to my colleagues, Madhvi, Christopher and Rishka, working across different thematic areas and based out of different offices. And I will give room for them to now introduce themselves, starting with Christopher. Christopher, welcome.
Hi, Shreem. Thank you very much. My name is Chris Tollinson. I'm the country director for Oxford Policy Management US, based in our office in Washington, D.C. And in my role, I oversee kind of OPM's wider engagement with USAID, as well as a number of US-based foundations. Thank you.
Hi, Shamim. I'm Madhvi Rajadeksha. I head the Global Public Sector Governance Portfolio at Oxford Policy Management, and I'm based out of India.
Hi, Shamim. I am Rishika Das Roy. I lead Oxford Policy Management's global work on urban policy and planning. I am based out of the New Delhi office.
Thank you all, and thanks for joining the conversation today. And maybe to start off on a positive note, localization is surely something to celebrate. Do you agree?
Well, maybe I'll kick us off, Shamim. I'd say the basic premise of localization is quite relatable and really resonates with me. So we're essentially saying localization is all about the fact that local actors are closest to the context in which the change or reform is happening, and they are hence best placed to decide on their own needs and also to determine how to drive that change, right? So the reason we're having this discussion is because increasingly there is a lot of questioning in the international development space about the fly-in and fly-out culture and whether it is effective, sustainable, besides, of course, its impact on climate change. And there are several considerations around localization, right, in terms of where is the change happening, who is considered to be knowledgeable, who really takes decisions in development programming, whose voices are heard or amplified in many ways. So governance expert Graham Teske actually has a great blog. I don't know if you all have read it. It's called Soapbox. And he basically says, you know, you might object to the terms around localization. So there are people who don't agree with the term decolonizing aid, for instance, and find it problematic. But no one really objects to the objectives or principles around localization, right? On whether it's something to be celebrated, I'd say the jury is still out. It's too early to know about whether it's something to be celebrated or whether it's just another buzzword in the development sector. But I would say that there's certainly an opportunity to be seized, right? We see more and more donors who are talking about localization. We also see a lot of community organizations that have networks around this space. So it's certainly an opportunity out there.
Thanks, Madhvi. So it's a starting point, as you've mentioned, that people are actually overall agree with the principles behind it, but maybe not how it's defined and some of the terminology that is out there that is used to refer to localization. And maybe on that note, then, what really counts as localization? Like, do we feel like some of the definitions that are used by funders are maybe perhaps very restrictive in nature. Is it important to have a definition, Rishika?
So, you know, while I was listening to you all speak, it, you know, had occurred to me and all of the literature, it kind of points to three things, according to me. And those are the three things that sort of resoundingly seem to fit into this conversation. One is on agenda setting and alignment. So that's the first bit. So who is setting the agenda for this conversation on localization? Who are the main sort of people who hold the power, yield the power, and distribute the power? And then the second bit is on actors. So you have agenda setters and then you have actors. So whose voices are being brought forward, you know, similar to what Madhavi was saying. And for me, the third bit of the definition is accountability. So how are we actually holding these actors and agenda setters to ensuring that the outcomes that donors want to see in the development space is what is actually happening? So you might be localizing, but how are we ensuring that there are the right checks and balances and the right kind of aid is flowing towards its intended purpose? So I feel in terms of definitions, even loose definitions work, as long as people who are working on certain projects which seem to be local are all on the same page and aligned about these sort of basic parameters.
I think coming in on the definitions from the USAID push for localization, you know, they've taken a very kind of legal approach to defining what a local entity is according to kind of four key criteria. And, you know, the crux of it focuses around local ownership and local management. And I think the intention behind, you know, that is clear, that they want kind of this drive towards localization to be meaningful and not to get pushed out by firms who will claim to be local in order to chase a project and, you know, continue to kind of expand their portfolio of projects, all for good reasons, because they feel like they can do a good job and support an organization, a country, the government to deliver impact. But I think that legal definition helps keep the finances flowing directly to the types of organizations that USAID in particular would like to see kind of take up that, you know, an increasingly higher share of the work that's being delivered. So I think the intention is a positive one, but I think there are challenges in, you know, adopting such a strict definition in localization, because it does undermine organizations and entities that are largely national and have national direction and management and have teams of national staffs that do have connections with organizations outside of that country. And I think the connections are important. And I think, you know, localization is absolutely the right thing to do. I think we just need to be careful that we don't kind of lose sight of the wealth of knowledge and experience that can be gained across global communities, and to still kind of create opportunities for sharing of ideas and discussions. And I think that should be considered as well.
Christopher, I think you're making a really interesting point, because very often the discussion around localization is framed as a dichotomy, right, between the local and the global to some extent. And I think there's a lot of nuance that can be brought in into donor thinking, etc. So the Overseas Development Institute actually has a very interesting paper called Are We There Yet? I think it was published around 2021. And they actually raised this question about who is local, right? And if we begin dissecting that, there are just so many categories. I mean, you could begin with actual local actors in low and middle income countries where a lot of development work happens. So you're starting with communities, community-based organizations, it could be community foundations. Then you have the Global North funded agencies, right, which could be NGOs, it could be private sector players. Then there are the policy actors in terms of governments themselves, which are at multiple levels, right, could be local, regional, national. So I think one of the questions I have, and to which I have no answers, is who really has the power to define who is local? And essentially, how do you prevent a few elite actors or organizations from capturing what is local space?
Thanks, Christopher and Madhvi, for pointing out what are some of the restrictions with having such a narrow focus on what localization is. So with the example of the USAID approach, which is mostly very legal and might not be inclusive of all types of what local is. And maybe a follow-up to that would be like, who should the power to define localization sit with? Because USAID is having their own definition. Is this something that should sit in the specific countries with the more local national players that Madhvi has mentioned? Or is this something that should be determined by the international development community? Or is it supposed to be more of a collaborative process of what local means? Because as we've seen with the definitions, it can be quite restrictive and not comprehensive in its term if we keep it strictly legal. So I don't have the answer, but it's just something to think about as to who's defining localization and whether it's enough for them to define what localization is because they are a donor or a development partner. To build up on that, what are the key things that are important when we look at measuring localization? How do we move beyond the numbers and make it more meaningful? And what are some of the things that we need to consider as we try and make the shift away from defining localization?
Thanks for that question, Shamim. I think, you know, at the very outset, this is a bit of a difficult one to delve deeper into and break down and perhaps find a solution for, because there are so many indicators within this. And especially if we try to unpack questions around local capacity or just try to understand it in terms of who is driving this change locally, I think it's going to be a bit of a tough one. There are sort of metrics which donor agencies or organizations can use to track what development players or partners are doing. And some of that is going to be, you know, quantifiable, understanding how local partnerships are brokered, how many local actors are sort of unleashed in the civil society space, who is taking on the agenda of talking about certain issues. Is it local organizations or international organizations? So there are ways of understanding how civic participation and spaces for this kind of development increases or not. But I don't think we'd still be able to attribute it to a strategy on localization that certain organizations may or may not adopt. But I think if we did try to look at it from the lens of where and how money flows, that might be something that's more concrete. But just measuring that may also be counterproductive and counterintuitive, because there is no guards or checks and balances to say that necessarily the local organization is one that represents community voice.
I agree with Rishika. This is quite a multi-layered question because measurements can happen at different levels, right? At a more micro level, at a project level, I'd say a rule of thumb in some ways is to understand if the intervention that you're working on has left the national actors with, say, the ability to sustain the work in an independent manner without the external partner who is, say, driving the work. I would say that's one way to look at the capacity or local question of, have you really driven sustainable change? But then there are complexities to that in terms of who is driving the change in the first place, right? I agree with Rishika on funding being one aspect. I'd say decision making is another aspect of who is really making decisions across the policy cycle, whether it is deciding what the program will look like, where the funding sits, monitoring, evaluating that, as well as the exit strategy, right? So once a program is over, what is it that you're leaving behind? So those are some of the questions that I think are worth looking at from a measurement perspective.
I agree with all of that. And I think that that's all very sensible. For me also in longer term, I mean, measuring, you know, the flow of funds to local organizations is a good kind of quick metric to, you know, understand that, you know, we're funding the right type of entities to deliver the projects in the places where we want to work. But for me, it's also, you know, what we're trying to do is achieve something which is a much longer term, which will fundamentally change the way that support to governments is provided. And we wanted to see a transition from organizations that are based in the US or the UK to transfer to organizations that are based, you know, within those countries. And I think even though that's a long-term aspiration, I think within a few years and iterations of kind of more funding going to local organizations, you know, there is a potential to have a fundamental shift around the types of organizations that put themselves up to lead projects. And that will demonstrate that they have built capacity and understanding about how to access these funds directly to be able to deliver these projects and interventions. And I think thinking about how to measure and monitor the landscape of development organizations that are applying for donor funding is something which would perhaps see if this whole effort to empower, you know, local organizations is actually working, or if it is just trying to push more money kind of through the system for the sake of doing something good.
Great. Thanks all for the inputs on challenges associated with measuring localization. And I think in responding to that, we've captured some of the challenges around what should be measured, what we should be looking at, what metrics we should use. All of which have their pros and cons. And to pick up on that and maybe bringing it home to Oxford Policy Management and to what we are currently doing as an organization, a follow-up question would be whether we as a global consultancy, do we think we are local enough? We talk about building capacity, but whose idea of capacity building or technical assistance is it? And I guess what I'm asking is whether are we responding to the needs of local actors themselves or non-local funders? And how do we address this as a global consultancy?
I can try to sort of piece this together in a way. So I feel like for OPM, even though localization seems to be the buzzword now, it's been pretty central and at the heart of what we do for a while. And it's been quite a strong part of our offering in the resilience community. So, for example, in the climate change practice and all of the work that we've done, which looks at enhancing resilience of local communities or national governments or subnational governments, this aspect of localization is something that we've worked on quite early on. Because, you know, while we've understood that knowledge may exist globally, understanding the context of adaptation or climate mitigation and working with local actors and identifying the right actors, I feel, has been part of our process. And I think one big strength here is our understanding of the political economy. And we've sort of sharpened our tools in a way to understand what is the power dynamic. Who is it that we think is local enough? Are there hidden agendas? So on and so forth. Just to give an example or two in the space of resilience, one is building resilience in Ethiopia. Peer, one of our projects, which we internally refer to as BREE, and the other is Action on Climate Today, which is based and focused on South Asia. And in both of these projects, localizing and ensuring that that was part of the design and delivery strategy, understanding how to mainstream climate change into national level policy using local actors and local evidence was part of how we even conceived the delivery. And I feel that's where most of our success has been in these projects, because the model wasn't bringing in, you know, international actors, flying in and flying them out, Madhvi, as you were saying before. And it was very much institutionalizing local knowledge and working on capacities which made sense to us, you know, and which were locally relevant. Because the other thing, and I'm sure we'll get to this as we start going deeper, is the question of capacity. Because sometimes the capacity to do certain tasks in local contexts may or may not exist. And in the absence of certain capacities, how do you fill it and work on the whole localization mandate?
I'm just going to add to something Rishika said, because completely agree with you, Rishika. I think, I sit with the government's practice where working with systems is pretty much about our existence, right? In many ways at OPM, but what is also considered good practice in working in sustainable capacity development in many ways is for actors like us to have a partnering or facilitating role where we are essentially enabling national systems, national actors, and this could be government, this could be civil society, to do their work better. And what does this really mean, right? So Rishika asked a very pertinent question about what if the capacities don't exist. In many ways, I'd say our role as outsiders to a system is to put the national actors in the driver's seat to enable them to identify what is it that they need, what is the support that they require, and then really work with them to provide the knowledge, skills, or say the behavioral techniques to aid that change management process.
Thanks, Madhvi and Rishika. And Madhvi, thanks for highlighting some of the potential solutions to what are some of the challenges raised by Rishka around localization where there is no capacity in country. And perhaps to build up on that, what do we think is our role as development consultants in helping overcome some of the challenges you've already mentioned and any other challenges that we see in practice? For instance, some might say that perhaps localization actually means more red tape for organizations locally. Do we feel like that's the case? And how do we go about overcoming that?
Shamim, I'd say there are things that we can do as individual practitioners, as organizations, as global organizations. So it could start with your individual practice in terms of seeding spaces where you don't necessarily belong. I, for instance, come from India, where it's very difficult to speak as a local in all contexts, right? So there will always be experts in spaces, on subjects, on issues who are more deeply rooted in the context than I am. And I think it is our responsibility as development practitioners to cede that space to someone who is better placed to talk about the issue, to work on the issue as well. I'd say in the broader development, international development space, there are questions about who is considered knowledgeable. Where does that knowledge sit? How do you create, do away with knowledge hierarchies in many ways, right? And that's a space I know OPM already does a lot on, where we do co-create a lot of knowledge with the communities that we work with. I think there's a lot more that can be done in the sector as a whole. There are broader questions about, can organizations like us do much more to enable and de-risk the funding space, because one of the arguments for localization is very often that there is a risk of funding national organizations vis-a-vis international organizations. Just to say, I don't agree with that. But can organizations which have, say, compliance in place like OPM then play more of a role in facilitating the de-risking of funding directly to national actors?
Thanks, Madhavi. Just to sort of add, I think you raised a really important question, right? When we say local actors or local governments or just localizing in national contexts, we assume that it's governance as usual or government as usual. But if you have certain governments which are conservative or, you know, extremely fragile or in politically unstable or corrupt situations, then localizing may not be the silver bullet or the golden bullet that we're all looking for in the development space. And I think we need to be a bit cognizant that even localizing without understanding that kind of political context gives rise to further developmental challenges. So I think this whole question is a really important one. And I think the aspect that you were mentioning, Madhavi, on who's localizing and what we can do as an actor or an organization to safeguard that space becomes really, really critical.
I think all very, very important points. I mean, when I think about this, you know, I think about it from kind of the whole sector that we work in, and, you know, recognizing kind of the flow of development finance into kind of how the sector works at the moment. And, you know, I think this whole access to development finance and kind of the rules and regulations and compliance requirements that, you know, international donors like USAID, FCDO, you know, put in place are a huge barrier to be overcome. And there's a lot of, you know, politics involved around what country governments will feel is acceptable, you know, terms and conditions to hand over, you know, money to support, you know, driving forward a development outcome. And, you know, I think we need to do a lot of thinking around how to be able to support organizations kind of work with that and lobby international donors to understand, you know, the barriers that they create by such kind of strict and stringent compliance requirements in the delivery of funds that are received from them. And I think, you know, as it stands, that's a critical challenge that the sector faces in kind of the drive for localization.
Great. Thanks all for highlighting what are some of the key challenges and how we could potentially improve on that and what discussions need to take place to further develop the implementation of localization in practice. The other question is really around then, as development consulting firms, how should the firms structure themselves within countries to better deliver on the localization agenda?
It's important that localization doesn't lead us down a kind of a siloized route, and that we stay kind of as an international community connected, and we share lessons learned and exchange ideas to an order that we're the best that we can be. And I think to facilitate that, you know, it requires headquarters organizations to adapt and to become a hub of learning. And then, you know, secondly, going back to some of the challenges that we discussed, you know, they can be organizations that share information about how to ensure compliance. What are donors looking for in order to, you know, be able to receive funds from them, and to be that kind of knowledgeable entity that can share that kind of best practice in bidding for and delivering work. So that's quite a fundamental shift, I think, from a lot of how, you know, we operate at the moment. Although, you know, I think we have made and others have made some important progress towards that.
And I think what we need to realize is that the development sector hasn't necessarily had a change of heart. It has become more competitive, more commercially viable, as well as more market-driven to be local. So, you know, this whole, you know, the balance of powers haven't just shifted in this space, but they have shifted globally as agendas have been redrawn in the world order as we see it. So, you know, what worked in the 70s or the 80s or even the early 90s doesn't work anymore. So I think that localization is going to become essential if the development sector wants to create impactful and sustainable work. And with issues that are cross-cutting, such as climate change or, you know, health and, you know, what we saw with the pandemic, having local knowledge and local actors is going to be a selling point or a USP for, you know, large consulting organizations and NGOs or INGOs like ourselves.
Well, this is something that we can talk about for a long time, but let's leave it at that. It's been a real pleasure talking to you all. Thank you, Rishika, Madhvi, and Christopher, and thank you for listening to the episode of International Development Where Now. We'd love to hear your views on localization, so please do get in touch. You can connect with us on LinkedIn at Oxford Policy Management, find us on Twitter at OPM Global, or reach out via our website at opml.co.uk. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast for more insights into the future of international development.